The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Hello, listener, and happy Easter. Welcome to another episode of the Perth Football Podcast. I'm Kalichio Sunwa doing hosting duties today while Sean is away. But we've got a room full of heroes, gentlemen who've decided to cut their Easter Monday plan short to make sure we can give you listeners something in your ears. Joining us is our Southwest correspondent, Nick Carter. Nick, how are you keeping, mate? You well?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. A bit too many Easter eggs. How are you?
I'm terrific, mate. A little bit tired, but we're good. A man who needs no introduction, Mr. Football WA, Tommy Dolman. Tommy, how are you, mate? You keeping well?
Yeah, good, Kalichi. Out of the chocolate coma into the football. We all love it.
Into the football, indeed. And not content with being the greatest man, he needed to become the Messiah today and steal the initials of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Josh Giant. Josh, how are you keeping, mate? You well?
I'm good. I have been JC for a while. It's generally on the back of my five-a-side football tops and goes down to the fact that pretty much every second boy around my age was named Josh. So,
damn.
Got to stand out somehow.
It's like the folks called River and Winter these days. Isn't that right, Nick?
Yeah.
Look, we'll get straight into it with our Macron moment of the week. Nick Carter, we'll start with you. What was your Macron moment of the week?
Well, definitely Liverpool going back to the top of the table. We can't deny that. Managed to stay up. Nice 9 o'clock kickoff as well last night, so I got to watch it all unfold.
Oh, it's lovely. The daylight savings is about to hit, isn't it? And we'll be mentioning
yesterday. So yeah,
love it. Tommy Dolman, what was your Macron moment of the week?
My Macron moment of the week is not the fact that we've got yet another Liverpool supporter on this podcast. I think we need to spread our resources a little bit more in terms of our recruiting, Kalichi. I'm getting a bit fed up of this, but my Macron moment of the week is from the State League, and a goal from Gwalup Croatia, Reece Crowell. A terrific hit from the edge of the area, so pure as the ball just sort of dropped nicely for him around 20, 25 yards out, and it's as pure as it gets, really. It's one of those really aesthetically pleasing strikes which just continues to rise as it hits the back of the net. So a beautiful strike from Reece Crowell. It was the first as Gwalup tried to mount a comeback. They were 3-0 down at halftime. The Gosnells, they got it back to 3-2, but weren't quite able to get the job done and yet to take a point this season. But a very nice goal from Reece, and that's the Macron moment of the week, Leachy.
Josh, what was your Macron moment of the week before I show everyone how much of a moron I am?
I'm so looking forward to that. It is unfortunate having so many Liverpool fans to follow, though I would say that Brighton-Liverpool game was pretty spectacular. Another spectacular game on the weekend was the 4-3 victory for Newcastle over West Ham United, who were cursed by VAR and Calvin Phillips yet again. But my Macron moment of the week actually comes from the end of the game, and I'm pleased to say that the West Australian NPL competition is now inspiring people at the very top levels of the game. You might remember the moment from early last year when Bailey Brown Montgomery picked up a second yellow card for kicking the ball away, then told us a couple weeks later while serving his suspension that he wasn't trying to waste time. He was actually trying to pass it back to his goalkeeper, who was a personal friend of his. Anthony Gordon, the deeply controversial and incredibly annoying winger from Newcastle United, who's just broken into the England setup, picked up a red card, and his second yellow was exactly that, passing the ball back to West Ham goalkeeper Lukasz Fabianski, clearly trying to stop West Ham from trying to get a late chance to even the game up 4-4. So congratulations to Anthony Gordon, and congratulations to Bailey Brown Montgomery, who's inspiring people at the very top of the game, like a young Zinedine Zidane.
Bailey, we miss you, mate. The game's not the same without you. My Macron moment of the week is me being an absolute moron. It was 7 o'clock this morning. I had just woken up after watching that awful game of football that was Manchester City 0, Arsenal 0. And I see this post that had just come up by Armadale being like, hey, we've signed Trent Sainsbury. And I was like, hold on, isn't he the local lad that used to play for them? This is a great story. What a huge signing this is for the league. I share that right away like some kind of imbecile journalist, only to within 5 minutes get a couple messages being like, do you think this might be an April Fool's joke? Do you think it might be an April? Of course it's an April Fool's joke. And so I just was like, hey, listen, I got caught, but I'm just going to write, hey, I hope this is an April Fool's joke. And it was. And also, gentlemen, I resent the fact that you don't like having a Liverpool fan on the podcast. We have been the most knowledgeable and fun people that we have had on the podcast. Thank you very much. But if you don't want to have Liverpool people on the podcast, Liverpool fans, guys, we've been asking, we've been saying, get involved, join the podcast, come be a part of it. And so far, none of y'all have. And we have an A-licensed coach who's joined us. And he supports the Reds. What do you want me to say? All right. I think that that awkward silence concludes our Macron moment of the week. We'll be back with part one. And we are back with part one of the Perth of the podcast. We're going to start with the men's NPL. We have done a pretty big deep dive on a few of the games, which you can check on the last free episode of the Full Time Whistle. You can get that on whichever feed you are listening to this on. But going into it, Western Knights are top of the league after three games. Absolutely perfect. They've only conceded two. They've played some big-time games at home. They've won away, won the hard way against some big-time teams as well. And the big question is, can they win the league? Nick Carter, we'll start with you. Can Western Knights win the league?
We're three games in. So saying that now would be a bit harsh on the other teams. But, I mean, listen, you know, you look at it when Dunlop United first came up, and to be fair, Anguilla when they first came up as well. Teams didn't know about them, so they did really, really well at the beginning. And then at times, I suppose, they got found out. Can they win the league? Yes, anyone can win the league. Do I think Western Knights will win the league? At this time, I don't think they will, but hey, listen, I hope they prove me wrong. You know, their style of play is very good. It's entertaining. Their ground is horrible to go to as a player. You do not want to go to that ground just with the way the pitch is on a slant, the small dugouts. Their support is immense. I hope they prove me wrong, but I just don't see it happening.
I mean, you alluded to the fact that we've had teams come up from the previous divisions and have a right good go of it. 2 years ago, I think it was Stirling. Last year, Olympic Kingsway ended up fourth, but there was a situation there in the league title where I think it was three or four games to go and they had a chance of winning the league. So I don't think it's far-fetched if history is anything to go by. So with that being said, Jesus Christ, JC, can they win the league?
I mean, I think it's, yeah, is it two teams have finished third 2 years in a row? As the team that's won the State League Division One, I think it's Nick said, obviously, and I've thrown you all under the bus because I was the one that recommended this question off air, but it is too early to say. But at the same time, you've got to be impressed with how they've acquitted themselves, and I think that the teams that have come up recently, like them and Kingsway and Stirling Macedonia, have been very different in nature to particularly the Dunlop United team, where they probably didn't invest as much in the squad. There's been a lot of investment over at Western Knights. They had a good crop of players, and it's mostly the players that they had from last year, particularly that back line. I'm sure you want to touch again on that Jake Sardelic goal at some point, Kalichi. But the players that they brought in, I mean, Christian Santic in particular, you're talking about a potential gold medal winner in the lineup there, and when you bring in a game changer like that, that just brings the ceiling up so high. Now, all the teams, I think it's pretty much all the teams in the league, they have that question mark over what happens when players get suspended, what happens when they get injured, who has the depth to compete with the teams that do seem to have that depth, like Bayswater and Red Star and those sorts of sides. But there's plenty of optimism, I'm sure, going around that part. But at the same time, they're going to be angry if we set their expectations too high, as well as I know some teams will want to do.
Tommy Dolman, without setting the expectations too high, can they win the league?
Well, I think they've not shown us anything in the first 3 weeks so far to dissuade us from thinking that they can't repeat what Kings, Wayne, Stirling have done in the past two seasons. I suppose that's what you look for in the early part of the season. You look to try and find patterns. You look to try and find styles of play and the way that teams are going to go about things and set up on the pitch. And in the first three matches of the season, albeit against Perth, Inglewood and Florett so far, and we're still waiting to see how they look against a team like Bayswater, Red Star, Kingsway, one of those sides who we think are going to be sort of at that pointy end come the business end of the campaign. I think the points on the board are a massive plus early in the season, just from a morale and from a confidence perspective. As Nick's alluded to, that home ground advantage is something which is clearly strong for them. Nick was telling us off air about what it's like to play at Nashfield and how tricky it can be with the crowd that they do have, how close they are to the sideline and just the pitch in general. So I might get Nick to sort of expand on that a little bit more in a second. But in terms of what we've seen from Knights in the first 3 weeks of the season, there's nothing that I've seen that would dissuade me from thinking that they've not got the potential of being in the top four again next season. And look, Florett definitely made them work on the weekend. Florett took the lead. The Knights, though, did have the response and they were able to turn the game on its head from 1-0 down. So that's a show of character that we'd not seen in the first 2 weeks. The first 2 weeks, we'd seen them score a goal and hold out for that clean sheet. This week, we saw them come from behind, and I think that's a string to their bow that will give them a lot of belief going forward.
I think my big thing about them at this preseason, having seen them a couple of times, was they play really good football. They can play out the back. The defense look miserly, but can they score goals? And then, obviously, they lost Kredowicz and Louis was unavailable at the time, so they did have Shea Donovan as the person who was kind of leading the line for them. But the fact that Louis's back, Shea Donovan is scoring, and in Christian Santich, they have a really good midfielder who can be a 10, an 8, and a 6. That gives them options because he can be that creative fulcrum for them to score goals. The keeper's pretty good. Jake Sardelic is a top quality goalkeeper, and they've got that spine in that midfield where they do have Daroca, they do have Santich, we've mentioned, they also do have Lazaro as well. So they have all of the pieces there to have a strong competitive team. Can they score the goals? Can they continue to score the goals? I think at home, and you'll touch on this in a couple seconds here, Nick, I think at home it's going to be a huge benefit for them playing at Nashfield. The crowd is aggressive. The crowd is intense. The ground is slanted one way. But it comes down to, and I think the other thing that we need to give them and the other teams credit for is the second nature infrastructure or that muscle memory of winning a campaign and playing a campaign. You're a team that's used to winning games, and you're a team that's got these high expectations and high standards. And I think that's translated through with Olympic Kingsway. That's translated through with Stirling as well, that you don't just kind of lose that automatically. And I think because the MPL and the State League, the gap isn't that big. It isn't like going from the Championship into the Premier League sort of thing. So I think that they'll be there or thereabouts. I did have them. I think I had them at fifth or sixth when I looked at the season. So I didn't think that they were going to be in any relegation worries. And I want to also just say that in terms of winning the league, they don't need to beat the Kingsway and Red Star. If they can go through and look at the bottom six and just make sure that they get 6 points home and away from the bottom six, that'll put them in a huge way there, that they don't necessarily need to win home and away against the top sides. But yeah, Nick, you were going to talk about how of an intimidating place Nashfield is, mate. What is it about it specifically that makes it so difficult for players to be playing there?
Well, I can only go off, like, you know, trying to coach there, I suppose. But straight away you get there and it's up a big hill. And you've got the friendly nature of the supporters there and the club personnel, and they're all really, really great with you, you know, pointing you in the right direction. But then you get into the changing rooms. The changing room, it's dark, it's small, it's gloomy. It's literally, it fits about eight people in, you know, so you're trying to find kit bags, you know. Plus you've got the 20s or the reserves in the 18s. So automatically you're just like, oh, God, here we go again. And then it's enclosed, like it almost feels like it's enclosed. So you've got all the fans there, the support, cheering them on. I mean, you just need to look at the Western Knights goals. Whenever they scored, where did they go to? You know, it's like the cop, I suppose, that side of it. The pitch is on a bit of a slant, which is always interesting because, I mean, one of the things we used to say is when we are playing that way against it, don't do too much running. But when you've got it on your favour, then just launch that ball forward and go. And, you know, like, I think Western Knights, obviously, they've got used to it if they train on the pitch, but definitely playing on it. And they've made it a fortress. You look at any successful team, their home ground is a fortress. And if they're undefeated there, then you're just going to keep going and you keep going and you get the points. Like you say, you don't need to keep beating these other clubs. You win your home games, you survive, and you can build upon that.
Which direction does the slant go? Did that play any role in the goal that we saw, the long ranger from the centre back?
No, it was against it.
so he kicked that ball real high then.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, like the whole pitches as well. Like it's quite an interesting place. But I mean, Western Knights have always been up there, and you think who was very successful as the coaches? So they've won the league. There was no promotion. Ivan I can never say it, he's one of my good mates, Ivan Zavala, who's Perth Glory's 20s coach, was the first team coach there, where they kept coming second, third. And then he's gone to Glory, next person's come in, and just carried on that momentum. So they've had the momentum for 10 years. Western Knights deservedly are in this NPL, and I believe they deserve to stay there as well.
Well, look, we'll go into the other game. The other game of the round that we haven't covered is the Armidale home match against Perth Red Star. That ended 1-1 for, well, 1-1, well, not 1-1 for Armidale, but 1-1 for the two teams. Listening to Alan Vernal's talk about the game through the Armidale media, which is the last shout out you get after you absolutely punked me, he mentions the fact that it feels like it's deja vu for them. And I think especially at home, they had a really good game against Bayswater where they were, they scored early. They had a bunch of chances. From what I understood, if our friend Pete Yorkobs had had a better day, he could have scored two or three goals, but didn't end up with any. And then he felt that they played really well against Red Star, but couldn't come away with the win. So it's three games without a win, 2 points at home that they've picked up against Red Star and against Bayswater City. So sides who you know, we thought would be challenging for the league. And at the same time, from a Red Star perspective, it's three games in. They've only won one, and the top goal scorer of the league hasn't scored a single goal. So I wanted to see what you guys were thinking or had any thoughts from seeing those performances and those results, especially again. It's still early in the season, but next week becomes 20% of the season gone, Josh.
If you'd gone on my on the tips that I've put in so far this season, Armidale would be 0 points from three games. So I think that they've outperformed based on, you know, they've probably had just about the hardest run of any of the teams at the start of the year, even though two of those games are at home. The two home games are Bayswater, Red Star. They're not ones where you pencil in 3 points or even pencil in, you know, 1 point before you go in necessarily. Fremantle, that was a bit of different gravy because it was a big emotional game for Fremantle, their first home game.
But they dominated the first half as well.
Back in the competition, dominated the first half, sucker punch for the goal. I think Frio was sort of coming into superiority over the 5 minutes before it, and then really poor performance in the second half. So the one thing that they'd be really happy about, I think, is that they didn't let the game fall away once they conceded that goal. Because the Frio game the week before, it seemed like the first goal went in and then the second goal went in, particularly when the second goal went in, the floodgates just opened up and they were ripped to shreds every single time Frio attacked after that. the Red Star goal coming pretty late as it did, it was an impressive fight back for Red Star for Armadale to come back and get an equaliser in the 96th minute, ruining my perfect 6-from-6 tips. I just want to put out, that would have been the first time I believe any of us have hit that high watermark. But they'd have to be very impressed that they came back from the disappointment of conceding late to come through and equalise against a team that I'm sure we all still expect are going to be right up there challenging for the title, and just quietly on Red Star and that barren run for Daryl Nicol. You've got to be terrified if you're one of the teams coming up against them in the next couple of weeks, because he must have a hat trick loaded up sometime down the line.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, because I think both of these teams are still in a bit of a process where they are trying to retool for the 2024 season. I think we've spoken about Red Star. They obviously won the night series. Very impressive performance, particularly in that second half when they were able to change gear. But they are still reconfiguring that midfield. Obviously, the departure of Andy Higgins. Chok Dow disappeared as well, the reigning gold medal winner. So they are still trying to get their fluency together in an attacking sense. And that's going to take a little bit of time, because in those attacking positions in midfield, they really are your creative hub. So I'm sure once some more minutes are into Matty George, into Lewis Tucker, into Sonny O'Shea, Joel Chianese got off the mark at the weekend. That'll do him the world of good as well to get off the mark for the season also, even if Daryl Nichols yet to get the first. But as Josh says, he has had chances within games, and I'm sure that there's going to be a time where he's going to get four chances and stick three or four of them away, and some unlucky side is going to be on the end of that. But from a Red Star perspective, I still think it's far too early to sort of jump off them by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet, and they're still just retooling. And a little bit of the same with Armadale, to be honest. I think there are positives, obviously, to come from the tough run of fixtures that they have had, which Josh described very well. But this was a very interesting young team that Alan Vernals had put together in the off-season. We spoke about it a little bit on the preview pod. Some very good young players have come across. Some intriguing import signings as well. Riley Wishart, Steve, and Chanyeol Chan as well. Chanyeol Chan's obviously got a couple of goals already off the mark for the season with that brace in round one. So they're still figuring things out as well. It's only 2 points, and that's probably a disappointing return based on the performances they have had. And maybe the expectations that they may have had internally is to thinking that they might have won at least one game for now. But I think it's very much, if you've got stock in both Armadale and Perth Red Star, you're probably holding it for now.
Yeah, 100% agree. Nick, did you have anything to add to that? Because I think that the Armadale side is actually a really, really good side. And I think a lot of teams, especially the teams who are vying for the league title, are going to have to go to Armadale and try to get 3 points. And I don't think, so far, Bayswater haven't, and Red Star haven't, and both were in winning positions as well.
Yeah, Armadale play three. They've got 2 draws, I believe, and lost 1-3. They are a very young side, and they're probably just lacking that experience. But saying that as well, the young players that they've got are very experienced. Luke Collins is very experienced. Lachlan Collins is very experienced. Hamish Van Deakin is very experienced. So they've got players there. They're difficult to grind down and beat. I just worry for them. Obviously, they brought in the imports who know how to score goals, but I just worry that they've only got plan A, no plan B or plan C. Like, I was there when I watched them against Frio, and they dominated, but once it went against them, it was just the floodgates open. So yeah, I do worry that they don't have a plan B or a plan C. But listen, we're only 3 games into the season, so let's see what happens.
I think just to emphasize that as well, we talk about patterns in the early part of the season, and what have teams sort of made a hallmark for out of themselves in a very short sample size. And Josh alluded to Fremantle City getting a run on Armadale in the first half, and then he noted, Julie, that they did concede the opening goal against Red Star, but then didn't fall to pieces this week. So there have been some learnings taken between week 2 and week 3. There are some little patterns and are some little sort of trends starting to form in the first 3 weeks of the season. And it'll be, and I suppose the watch from a neutral perspective, which we all are, is about seeing whether those patterns hold and go through until round five or round six, and whether it's something tangible in terms of something to be excited about, or whether it's something to be deeply concerned about, or whether it's something that teams can learn from as and when the season goes on.
Look, we've got to go. Sorry, Kalichi, Armadale are looking towards the future as well. Like, you look at their 18s and the 20 side, their 18s have only won one game in 2 years, but they've stuck with the same coach to move the players up and to try and actually create a culture there. So they are looking towards the future, and they're looking at the young ones. And Alan Vernal's coming in last year as an ex-Glory Academy coach, can help with that. So I do think things will light up from in the future.
Well, look, looking into the future a little bit, there's some key games to have a look out for next week. Obviously, the big one that's probably going to be the game of the round is going to be Perth Red Star versus Olympic Kingsway. But from the other perspective, we've got winless Armadale, Balcatta, and Englewood. Armadale are playing Glory. Balcatta are playing top of the league leaders Knights, and Englewood are playing Stirling on the back of a loss. So these are some pretty key games to kind of think about and look at that they're probably preparing for this week, knowing that if results don't go their way, there could be a bigger gap in the league. If results do go their way, then the league gets nice and shrunk and tightened just like it was last season. And I know it's only four games in play here, and the ludicrousness of the league is Englewood could win and be ninth and all of a sudden they're now looking up going, yep, we're right exactly where we want to be. But for example, if all these three teams loses, if Armadale, Balcatta and Englewood all don't get a win next week, then all of a sudden we're now seeing potentially a gap in there. But also if Red Star don't get a win next week against Olympic Kingsway, then they're now in a situation where it's what, 4 points? They're not looking to flash themselves depending on how results go. But that is it for part one. We'll be back with part two, where we give a quick roundup of some of the NPLW action. So we'll be back right after this. And we're back with part two. We're talking NPLW. Like we said earlier, we have covered two of the earlier games in the NPLW, and you can check that out on our Full-Time Whistle podcast. It is our last free Full-Time Whistle podcast before we move it into our Patreon section. But for this one, we're going to talk about Perth Red Star and their game against Subiaco. Josh, you caught a bit of this game and had a bit of some interesting insights and stats you wanted to share with us, mate.
Yeah, so something that's really interesting, and I hope they do it throughout the season. I know a few of the teams have been putting up some of the statistics they had, and we got the sort of TV broadcast stats after the game from Subiaco when they put up the result. And I can see why they'd be keen to publicise it, given that if you look at, you know, the result, you go 4-0, it was a bit of a, you think it's a bit of a pasting, and then you look at the stats and you think they're a bit more competitive than that. They had, 345 attempted passes to 366 by Perth Red Star. Pass completion, right, wasn't that different, 57 to 60. Red Star just shaded the possession 52 to 48, although they had a big advantage in corners and shots, which is somewhere where you look out for domination. They had 12 corners to two from Subiaco. But something that's really interesting about that is that I don't think Carlos Vegamena will be too unhappy about stats which show that their passing percentage wasn't that great, or that show that their possession wasn't that dominant against the other team. Because what is it that Perth Red Star really want when they come up against an opposition? It's verticality and it's space behind the back four. And if they have teams that are going to come up and try to use the ball and push them back into their own half, that almost works to their advantage, given particularly the massive acquisition that they made in the offseason of Caitlin Douglas. Now, she created the first goal very on. She laid the ball across to Sarah Carroll, basically a carbon copy of the third goal from the Knights series final the week before against Balcatta. And then she went up against her marker, bumped her over, basically sat her down, and then slid the ball in with a curler into the far corner past Ash Riddle for the second. Quinn Dolan with a very good leap from a corner to score. I don't know if we're going to be saying too much about the Red Star
defenders getting up and scoring goals this season because they tend to be pretty conservative the way Carlos sets up the side. But really, really good leap for that one for Quinn Doan. And then I believe, was it Reina Kagami? I didn't actually see the second half, but I think Reina Kagami back from holiday scored coming off the bench. So they might get a little bit more control over the midfield as well with Reina Kagami back in the side permanently, and we know they've got a couple other Japanese imports who made an appearance on the weekend. But you just have to think, you know, it must be so difficult for these sides that want to play football and want to play with the ball, because you almost play into Red Star's hands. And at the same time, you're going up against a team that is the most dominant in the competition. It's something that's, I think, really almost like coming up against Klopp's Liverpool, where they're so dominant on the counter-attack, or the Matildas, where they've got the pace on the wing and they can defend deep and then break out with Ford and Razo and Kerr when she's not injured. And I think it just must be such a handful for opposition coaches to deal with, because if you look at a team like Balcata, almost the way that they play football plays into Red Star's hands with the weapons that Red Star have at their disposal.
Mate, that is such a terrific analysis, and that is analysis you can only get here at the Perth Football Podcast. I like the fact that it is one of those, like, pick your own poison, like pick the way that you want to be decimated. Do you want to sit back and just have them play and play and play and play and play, or do you want to take them on and leave a lot of space for Caitlin Douglas to literally run past you and square the ball up? And it was really interesting. Like, we mentioned it on the Full-Time Whistle podcast at the end of the night series final. We mentioned her composure to find Sarah Carroll, like, in the box, and the fact that it's been regurgitated. We asked some of the coaching staff at Red Star, and they said, no, we've been working on this. We've been making sure that we're telling our striker, in this case Sarah Carroll, hey, we want you to kind of almost move away from the ball as Haaland would kind of do. So we don't want you to be attacking that near post straight away. We want you to almost back away and leave this
back
to the penalty spot and have the far post run open or the cutback open. And the fact that she can do that is terrific. So I'm curious to see how teams are going to break them down, especially with these new imports that are coming through. Depending on where they play, we don't have a lot of information about them, but you also think about the work that Katie Ritchie and Caitlin Balaga has done, and now, like, Reina Kagami's come back. It's like, well, hey, thanks so much for stepping in. But the football of the year has now come back into the midfield. So where are you? We got to put you. So it's an embarrassment of riches for them right now.
Yeah, Ritchie was good again on the weekend. She actually got forward probably a little bit more than she did in the Balcata game, where definitely in the Balcata game, She would have had more defensive duties that she had to set her mind to. One thing for Subiaco, you've got to say, you know, they had a period towards the end of that first half where they're actually on top, and they've showed that they can hang. You know, they're not easy beats by any means. They had a couple moments, particularly Savannah Oosthuizen charging down the left flank. She's really dangerous. This girl from the southwest, and she'd be one of the quickest players in the league by a mile. She streamed past Quinn Doan a couple times, played a cutback, and it was just about the quality that was on the end of it. I think Stella Zampogna is a really good pickup for them. Great. She's a good hold-up player, and it'll be interesting to see whether she can get on a run and score a few goals now that she's not playing behind players like she was at Perth SC. And certainly, I think those games against the teams that are maybe expected to be challenging for the end of the top four are going to be big ones for her to show that she can be a dangerous finisher. But they didn't have Mariana Tabane or the goalkeeper, Monique Todd, on the weekend. And I think they would have been big additions. They could have been the sort of players that, you know, if one of those chances falls to Mariana Tabane from the cutbacks, all of a sudden you're talking about a game that's 2-1. If they've got the first choice goalkeeper in the side, maybe they're a bit sturdier on the crosses, or they save one of those one-on-ones, and then all of a sudden they've got a foot in. So I think they'll have a foot in these games this year, but definitely there's a step up in class when it comes to Perth Red Star in particular.
Anything to add on that one, Tommy?
No, not particularly. Only that, as Josh said, Subiaco, I think, can take a lot of positives out of that performance. The fact they were 3-0 down after, 37, 38 minutes is probably a situation where, as you say, you look at it on paper and you think, oh, this is one-way traffic. But they did get in some good areas. And really, when Mariana Tabane is back in that team, it's going to look completely different in the final third. And Taina Campos is a really good story as well. I just wanted to mention her quickly. She's a player who was with Curtin University in the first two seasons of the MPLWO women's competition. She's a really technically good footballer, really good dribbler, and knows how to hit one from distance as well. And she was out for the whole season last year with injury and has only just come back. So I think that was her first league game or MPL game back for something like 18 months since her recovery. So really good to see her back out on the pitch. And obviously she's still sort of gelling and getting back up to speed as well. But I think, as Josh says, you get somebody like her and Zampogna playing off that experience of Tabane, it's going to make a big difference. And from a Subiaco perspective, I think when you go into the campaign, you look at the games against Red Star and you sort of think, well, those aren't the games that are going to define your season, but they are games which can shape next week in a sense that you can take learnings, you can take experience, and you can take belief. And I think Subiaco can certainly get plenty of that. They've got UWA next week on Saturday afternoon, and then they've got Murdoch University Melville. So the next two games there are definitely opportunities where they can get some points, I think.
Tommy has just done a terrific favour for your boy to help me transition, because speaking of UWA, we have a special treat for you listeners. We're delighted to be able to have former editor-in-chief of Impetus Women's Football, Ben Gilby, contribute to the podcast this year by giving us little snippets and takes on the matches that he watches. So we're going to plug in that insert right now, and it is Ben Gilby giving us his thoughts on the UWA match against the NTC.
The NTC dominated the possession and territory at the UWA Sports Park on Sunday afternoon to run out winners in UWA Netherlands' first ever MPL women's match, but the home side produced a well-disciplined performance that showed there'll be no pushovers at this level. UWA Netherlands' squad has been boosted since promotion with the arrival of players with American and European experience such as goalkeeper Morgan Springer and attacker Michaela Thorley, both of whom had influential afternoons along with established club star Emily Dinsdale. Thorley is an excellent player with good touch and close control. She also has the vision to bring teammates into play and see opportunities early, which are all highly desirable assets for a player to have at this level. Dinsdale worked hard throughout. She was looking to provide an outlet as well as assisting at the back. Her efforts along the right flank, where she was involved with a fascinating battle with Violet Longmore, caught the eye throughout. Whilst the NTC have lost the spine of last year's team, many of whom have gone on to A-League women contracts, there's still a host of real talent with plenty of MPL women's experience in this side, who have been joined by Jessica Johnson, who showcased her outrageous ability at such a tender age from Murdoch University Melville last season. The visitors dominated the opening exchanges with a focus on the right flank, with the dangerous Claudia Hulis lively on the opposite side. Hannah Collins was looking for outlets in the centre of midfield, and Jessica Johnson was popping up all across the front third. The NTC were bubbling with creativity. They were that bit quicker to the press when not in possession, and that bit crisper in the pass, as you would expect from a side the bulk of whom have played together at this level for longer than the home side. 20 minutes in, the NTC turned up the pressure. After calls for a free kick for Theodora Muthi on the left-hand edge of the box, the ball was played back to Longmore, who hit a stunning curling shot that Morgan Springer brilliantly pushed away for a corner. A second corner was forced, with Jessica Johnson playing the ball in for Collins to get an effort in goal that Springer saved at the cost of a third straight corner, this time on the right. Jessica Johnson played a 1-2 from the set piece with Nellie Johnson before playing in a high ball for Longmore to head home towards the back post. To their credit, UWA Netherlands regrouped and focused on their block, trying to force the visitors' play from deeper. Yet Longmore was becoming even more influential now in this period of her vision and runs along with Maya Archibald, who was able to draw passing moves under pressure to create outlets. 10 minutes before the interval, the NTC doubled their advantage when Jessica Johnson found Mia Britton outside on the right wing. Britton played a superbly weighted ball that both dissected the home defence and then found the path of Hulis, who comfortably found the net from just outside the 6-yard box. Home side kept battling and were rewarded as the clock ticked towards the 45th minute as a long ball was lofted over the top for Makeda Thorley to run onto and then lob Jessica Skinner with some aplomb to gain the honour of scoring UWA Leighton's first ever NPL women's goal. There was still time for the NTC to establish their two-goal lead before the break as Hulis was played through and tried to lift the ball over Springer but couldn't get the height on her effort. The visitors came out firing as the second half started with Jessica Johnson dinking a clever pass through to Archibald who could fire wide of the left-hand post. They continued with early momentum forcing Springer into two further excellent saves, first from a long-range effort and then from a cross shot from the left. UWA Netherlands are now employing a much higher press but whilst it worked well as a tactic, it did allow the NTC to showcase their ability to patiently probe and play some technically excellent triangular passing movements. The visitors' passing game made UWA Netherlands chase the game for much of the remainder, but the hosts were exceptionally well-disciplined, well-structured and did the hard yards. There would only be two further opportunities on goal in the second period, one for each side. First of the hosts when Dinsdale ran down the right and cut in to get a shot away that was saved by Skinner, and then 5 minutes from the end, Springer was called into action to deny Hulis once more when the attacker got a shot away, which was pushed out. Lots of positives then for UWA Netherlands to take from this first ever NPL women's match for them. They will cause problems for the sides likely to be around them in the ladder if they can maintain that discipline and use the likes of Thorley and Dinsdale in the offensive areas. The NTC might feel that they didn't get the goals that their domination of territory and possession deserved, but they faced a hard-working opponent who worked really hard for the whole 90 minutes.
Thank you so much, Ben. Really, really enjoyed it. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening, you can always catch up on some of the terrific writing and reporting that happens at Impetus Women's Football. You can check that out on the website. We'll also put a link in our description as well. It was really good seeing Jess Johnson and the way that she was playing. She looked so composed and so assured in that side. The other really cool thing to see was NTC tweeted this out, but they said that they've been actually working on that set piece that led to the opening goal. So, and you can actually see in the video, you can see Tom. Tom, I'm really sorry. I can't remember.
Klavovic.
Former BB United, absolute menace on the pitch. If you go all the way back that day, back to those days, Josh. But you can see him kind of like fist pump as the goal goes in, just giving that indicator that this is something that they've been working on. So it's real cool seeing. Seeing them play, but also cool seeing that it was a really competitive game from both sides.
Yeah, I thought it was a game in which both teams will feel pretty satisfied on the whole. I think NTC will be a little bit frustrated that the game wasn't put to bed earlier because they had an absolute boatload of chances in this game. They were the cleaner team in terms of possession and in terms of creating chances, but a combination of some resilient defending from UWA Netherlands, also a little bit of fortune. I think Louise Tana hit the bar in the second half. And also Morgan Springer in the UWA Netherlands goal. She was sensational. She made four or five excellent saves, which really did keep UWA in the game. And when you've got a goalkeeper like that who can sort of work that magic, I think it's something that's going to be really valuable for them, not just in terms of necessarily getting points over the course of a season, but just keeping them in games and keeping this group who are obviously new to the top flight of local women's football, believing that they do belong because it's going to keep them in games and they're going to feel like they do have a chance in every match they play. They had a set piece with about 30 seconds left in the game. They were trailing 2-1 and Lawrence Lewis was sending everybody forward by the goalkeeper. And it must feel nice to be in that position where you have got an opportunity to make the opposition sweat. And I'm sure Ben was, as I mentioned before, a little bit frustrated that the clinical aspects maybe went missing in the final third. But I think what we did see with NTC is that this next crop of players are there and ready to step up. Jess Johnson, in the first half in particular, was sensational. She led the counter-attack as well for the second goal, where she sent the pass out wide right to Mia Britton, who then crossed in to Claudia Hollis to get the second goal of the game. And I just think Theodora Mutius as well, another player from the under-15s, Lucio Halloran, another player who played under Sam last season as well. She played centre-back as well, which was a bit of an interesting switch. Hannah Collins looks as though she's ready to step up and take another and go to another level this season, having sort of been a little bit more of a bit part player in and out of the starting lineup last season. So there are a lot of players in that NTC side who look as though they're ready to step up and fill the void of the likes of Lala, Johnston, Cassidy, Bailey, etc. And that's a testament to the program they've got there as a whole, you've got to say.
Look, the coolest thing about having Nick join us is we now have someone who can also challenge Josh in terms of name dropping the region that they are in or have lived in and talk about the players from that region. So, Nick, you noticed a couple of Southwest players in the match as well?
Yeah. Violet Longmore, she's got two sisters and her dad is a bit of a coach guru down here, Andy Longmore. He won the Wally Freeman Coach of the Year just last year, but Violet, she's sensational. Listen, I love this NTC side. I think Ben does a great job. I think Sam does a great job. In my opinion, Ben should be the next Perth Glory women's coach. That's my opinion. So, put it out there. But yeah, Violet is just unreal. Her sister played for Frio Siobhan. They've got another sister, Ariana Dawson. Siobhan and Ariana used to actually play. The women's league down here was not good enough for them in the sense of that they play and they was too good. So they ended up playing like reserves, men's. And Siobhan would score a hat trick. Ariana would take all the free kicks, corners and set them all up. They were just unbelievable. I'm pretty sure they both had full scholarships in America before coming here. Ariana was the leading goal scorer for the Firebirds last year. The Firebirds last year. So, I'm pretty sure Violet's going to be a chip off the old block with her sisters and with her dad there. Her dad travels up all the time. He's actually involved at Southwest Phoenix now with the junior Firebirds. So, as someone who has coached in Kalgoorlie in the Southwest, Josh, I'd like to say we've got your number a little bit there.
You going to take that, Josh?
It's a population game, mate.
It's a popularity contest, Nick.
I'm going to say I coached in Kalgoorlie and I went undefeated all season. So
I just wanted to add as well, I did speak about the NTC quite a bit before, but just to add on UWA as well, I mentioned how Morgan Springer was outstanding on the day. What they do is they've got this spine of US imports, essentially, because you also had Michaela Thorley, who was in the centre of midfield. She was the scorer of the goal from 35 yards out, really good execution, I suppose, to see goalkeeper Jess Skinner off her line and then to put that over the goalkeeper from range. Mackenzie Ristada was solid at the back as well. And I suppose you drop that spine in amongst players who, as we mentioned last week on the preview pod, have played together and who do have that chemistry and that cohesion. And you've got some young players like Alyssa Kincaid, like Hafsa Kiadi as well, like Samara Richards, who do have who have sort of come through Red Star and who have come through some of these other under 21 sides in the NPL and who are maybe relishing that opportunity to play more first team football. The only thing that I saw from UWA Netherlands, which would worry me a little bit, and worry is probably too strong a word, but I just think, and this is going to take time, obviously, it's one game in the NPLWA women's competition. We've spoken about how competitive they were in their first game. But I'm sure Lawrence and the team will be working on that sort of front third a little bit. They just struggled to hold the ball up at times, and that's really important, I think, for a team like UWA Netherlands, who are new in the league, because it gives the rest of your team an opportunity to take that breather and an opportunity for your team to get back in shape and to maybe anticipate these counterattacks that NTC were performing on them yesterday. So maybe just having that ability to keep the ball in the final third a little more regularly, and also perhaps using the outlets that they do have on the flanks. I thought Emily Dinsdale, when she did get on the ball and when she did get into the channels, was quite dangerous yesterday. She was able to stretch that NTC defence quite a bit. But they maybe didn't quite use her often enough in the game, and nor Serena Lynn on the other side of the pitch when she came on either. So a lot of positives for UWA, that's for sure. And I'm sure they'll take their learnings into the next game with Murdoch University Melville, which could be a big game for them.
I love it. We've got another university derby. But before we head off, Josh, you got a right of reply to what Nick said there, mate. So is this feud over, or are we continuing it?
Well, look,
Kalgoorlie doesn't have the population or the infrastructure for a state league team, and teams don't want to fund a 6-hour trip. So
how good would it be?
There's a little bit. I was pushing for it back in the day. There's a lot of water that has to go under the bridge before something like that happens. Definitely. I think they've got some stuff to sort out as well. But
considering that there's only four teams and the players within that area, like, it made a very, very good league. Like, there was one player who used to play for Kalgoorlie College, and he used to be Agbon Lahore's strike partner at Villa. You know, and then he was just ended up in Kalgoorlie. Like, just that's the type of standard you've got out there. It's great.
It wasn't Juan Pablo Angel, was it?
No.
I do. Given that you've segued into this, a couple of things to say about Kalgoorlie, and there is a Kalgoorlie theme running through the league. Obviously, Pete Rakic, from there, played for Kalgoorlie College. And I think a little bit of Boulder when he was younger. Mm-hmm. And a lot of girls from the Kalgoorlie TSP that I set up when I was at Football West. We had Perth Red Star under-21s, had Nat Malachy and Amelia Shilton. Amelia Shilton's just moved up from Kalgoorlie last year. She looks like she's going to be pretty tasty. And the two stars of that program, Jess Flannery, had a great game for Perth. And Tanika Lala, her maiden goal for the Perth Glory women's team. I wish she'd gotten a bit more action on the park this season, but hopefully she can go on to bigger and better things after that. It was a great moment with all of the players getting around it and mobbing her, even though it was at the end of a 2-1 loss.
Well, look, that is it from the Perth of the podcast. Any more for any more, Nick?
No. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Tommy Dolman, any more for any more?
No, other than just to sort of touch on the State League and just to say UWA, Subiaco and Murdoch University Melville, the three teams with two wins from two to start the season. I think when you sort of looked down at the leagues, you were maybe expecting that Mandra, Dine Ellis, Sorrento were probably more likely to be the teams that were going to start on a flyer. And with that 100% record, I know Sorrento and Dianella drew 0-0 against each other at the weekend. So both of those sides are still unbeaten. But definitely a shout out for UWA Subiaco and Mum FC, who both finished in the bottom half of the league table last season. So clearly some changes have been made at both of those clubs in the off-season. And whilst it is only two games, they're bound to take a lot of confidence from that going forward. And I think you're potentially heading down to a big game this weekend, Kalichi, UWA Netherlands versus Sorrento. So we'll see whether UWA can step up to that challenge of welcoming Steve McGarry's side down to the UWA Sports Park.
I hope their chips are good because the Perth Football Podcast will be down there for that game as well. JC, any more for any more?
No, I played my trump card. I'm all good.
And that is it from me, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening on your... Sorry, thank you, gentlemen. That is it for me, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much to Nick, Tommy, and Jesus Christ for joining us in this Easter special. And you too, Josh. Really appreciate you guys doing this, especially on the late notice. You all take care. And listener, remember, be careful and be kind. Get on our Patreon. Give us the 5 stars. Don't give us 4 stars. If you give us 4 stars, we'll believe that you're some sort of hater. Take care, look after yourselves, and all the best.
Happy Easter, bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.